Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hi again, it's Scott Agnes. Just a reminder, you can read all my work at fieldhousefiles.com. And new in the postseason, I am going live on YouTube after every Pacers playoff game. So here's the show following the Pacers Game 2 win in Milwaukee with Game 3 on Friday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. Hello again, everybody. We are live on YouTube for the post-game show. Sorry for the slight delay. Doing everything yourself leads to a lot of different things I got to check off, from getting my story out there to tweeting it to logging on to getting everything ready. But nonetheless, here we are ready to go after the Pacers' 125-108 victory over the Milwaukee Bucks. And obviously that key stretch was early into the fourth quarter after a quick 4-0 burst that we saw originally from the Milwaukee Bucks. The Pacers answered just like they had throughout much of the game. That was what was so impressive in this game. The physicality, they matched it. The poise, they had it. The turnovers, they didn't have it. Just four, really, during those meaningful minutes. And so that's in large part what helped the Pacers come away with the victory here tonight over the Milwaukee Bucks. And again, that fourth quarter stretch, a 23-4-1, was magical for this Pacers team ended up being the difference, ultimately, in this one. And Pascal Siakam is obviously the player of the game. What can you say about him? Oh, so much, I think, is the right answer, ultimately, and what he was able to help the Pacers get accomplished. I wanted to highlight Andrew Nembhard. You want to highlight some of what Miles Turner did. Even Tyrese Haliburton. So many people are going to look at the box score and say, hey, he only had 12 points and 12 assists is obviously key in something we're used to, but just 12 points. Well, there's a lot of different things, much like Buddy Hield, quite frankly, before him did. And in doing so, helped open things up from everyone else. Just the pressure that they applied on Tyrese opened up everything else for him, for example, out there. And yes, you want to see him take more than 10 shots even then. I mean, when you shoot 3 of 7 from three-point range, give me more, right? But he's also a student of the game. He understands what's important, what works, and not to force things. And I don't think he did that as much. But I will note, during that early fourth quarter run, Tyrese was not in the game. I thought that was also interesting. It just spoke to what Pascal Siakam was able to do. He's the best player, most complete player on this Pacers team. And you can see why the Pacers have been after him for over a year. For probably, what are we talking about, 14, 18 months. They were interested in OG Anunoby with that Toronto Raptors team. And of course, very interested in what they could potentially get as well from Pascal Siakam. And tonight, and even in game one, even in a loss in game one, you could see why. Just because all the little things that he's able to do and help get accomplished with this Pacers team to give them a chance. 37 points, 11 rebounds, 6 assists. He was just masterful in the Pacers' win tonight. And so I have a lot of good things to say about him. But Pascal Siakam, I mean, he's a guy that's in a contract year, by the way. And it's not as if he needed more leverage. But if he did, if instead of five-year deal, Pacers are trying to talk him down to 3 or 4 years. They have some leverage in Pascal Siakam's camp with agent Tom Ramisar and what they're able to do, because Pascal was fantastic. Yeah, Robert says, give Pascal the bag. And by the way, he's not alone in saying those comments. I've seen a lot from Pacer fans on my Twitter account as well. I will say, one of the things I have appreciated about these early playoff games is how much more active social media is again with Twitter and everything. I don't know if it's the new Twitter algorithm or if it's just Pacer fans unable to watch on Bally Sports or just disinterested in social media, but the feed was flying tonight. Man, give me a lot more of that. Let's go back to the top here, the comments on YouTube. I'll also post this coming up after the show on my Fieldhouse Files podcast if you weren't able to catch all of it or wanted to re-listen to what we had to say here. A big Pacer fan says, go Pacers. MK Sinks back after game one says, so much to love about tonight, but if I were to nitpick, it'd be free throw disparity. Somewhat concerning. Pacers were 64% to the Bucks 90%. Got to make those shots. Right, absolutely. And MK Sinks, that was again an issue for the Pacers in game one, as well as those free throws. They just got to make them. And Pascal Siakam, for as well as he's played, especially in that first game, he wasn't knocking them down. And this one, only got to the line 3 times, made 2 of them. In the first game, he attempted 10 free throws and did so quite average. I think he was like 5 of 10, if I remember. Actually, I have it right here in front of me across my desk. 5 for 10 from the free throw line there in the first game. But it's been interesting. We've seen both teams distance themselves in the fourth quarter to the point where the Indians that really haven't been exciting, where the game has kind of really been decided early on in the fourth quarter, and it hadn't gotten to that level. I don't know about you. I was, as we were watching that early fourth quarter, them make that 23-4 run, and they grew that lead to 23 points, and Doc Rivers used another timeout. All I was thinking about was Slick Leonard. I was sitting there thinking, man, it would be so great to tune into the radio and hear him say, turn out the lights. We all know where he's going, right? The party's over. That's what I felt. Because this Pacers team, this fan base has needed it. They had lost 10 straight postseason games. It is their first postseason win in 3 series. You have to go back to April of 2018. Just unreal. Because after that, remember, they were swept by the Boston Celtics and then swept in the bubble by the Miami Heat. Haven't gotten back to the playoffs. It's their first time in 4 years. And so this is familiar territory for Pacer fans, or at least it was, just not in recent years. I think, what was the stat? I used to keep track of it when it mattered. Second only to the San Antonio Spurs, they had reached the playoffs in 29 of like 34 years. It was incredible. Now, you would sacrifice a couple of those playoff berths to have a better team and have more of championship aspirations. But this is the time of year all the players have talked about. This is the time of year when you want to be playing. The games feel different. The energy is different. And I'm sure I'll get into it. A lot of unhappy Pacer fans and viewers tonight trying to watch the game on a blacked out Bally Sports or NBA TV, really. But because of Bally Sports, I heard a lot from friends personally, and then I saw a lot of your comments on Twitter as well. Thanks for all of you who have joined this Pacers postgame show. We're going to be doing it for every single Pacers postseason game here this year. Let's go back to the comments. Pacers showed up and fought tonight. Absolutely. That was one of my striking thoughts as well. Who knew that Andrew Nembhard had that much competitiveness inside of him? And this all goes back, I think, to what Chad Buchanan, Kevin Pritchard, Rick Carlisle, really the front office more so, even before Rick got here, as they tried to make the shift in the way in which this team was organized and built and such. They needed more dogs. I think that's overused, but they needed more competitors, guys that hated to lose. And so many guys now on this roster are just like that. Andrew Nembhard is one of them. Man, I was thinking about Benedict Mathurin as well, especially during that stretch in the third quarter where it really got chippy. Things got interesting. There was a back and forth. Nembhard staring guys down. It's like, who are you, Andrew? Like, he is such a quiet guy for the most part until he gets on the floor, and then he wants to kick your ass as much as anyone else. It was fascinating to watch, and he just struck the right balance between competing, showing an edge, showing that he's not backing down, but also not screwing over the team, not earning a technical or getting in trouble. And by the way, a big shout out to Aaron Nesmith, who continues to be indispensable, who does the intangibles, the little things. Did you catch him at least two times tonight where he wrapped up his teammate and moved him out of the way? It's like, no, 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 we're not getting involved in this. We have bigger things at hand. We have much more important things that we want to get to, of course, and that being the win. And we did see late a double technical issued. We did see Nembhard ultimately was given a technical foul, but then he had a stern but fair, I think, looking conversation with top assistant coach Lloyd Pierce. Another growing moment for this Pacers roster. I even go back to the start of the game. During the first timeout when Carlisle had to use one early, we saw Dame go off for 10 of their first 16 points, and he had as many points as the Pacers did there in the first few minutes. It was James Johnson taking over the first huddle. That was fascinating for me to see, just furthering his value and exactly why he signed like six contracts with this Pacers team. He's earned probably upwards of $10 million over the last couple of years, re-signing, maybe not quite that much, but seems like it, about $6 million probably, signing, being waived to make another transaction happen, and then being signed back on. So many different ways we can go with this game. All the events happening from the TV broadcast issues to limited turnovers to their response to Halliburton scoring more. How about their three-point shooting? Pacers 6 of 36, 44%, 56 overall for the game. To how they dominated the paint. They won the rebounding battle by 5. Just so many different things that I think this coaching staff and you fans should appreciate about the way in which the Pacers played. And also, how about the 8-man rotation? This is what I was expecting from Rick Carlisle. We did not see that in the first game. And a little bit, I think, was how much and how poor that game started that he wanted to try a little bit of everything. Throw Jalen Smith out there. Throw Doug out there. Throw Isaiah Jackson out there. We need answers. It almost felt like those were rash and rush decisions, perhaps. Tonight, not the case. I think they stuck to their guns. 8-man rotation until it was closing time when the game was well in hand. That was another notable thing from tonight's Pacers victory. Back to the comments I want to go. AJ says, but Bucks look old tonight. I don't know if they looked old. They looked tired and gassed, which is exactly by design for the Pacers. They also looked like they needed offensive help. Imagine this team if Dame was not there. You probably would have had Jrue Holiday go off for 28 points and perhaps 11 assists. But I mean, outside of that, you see why they went and got Dame, and he's able to revert back to who he was, I think, in Portland. I think we're seeing a lot of Blazers Dame, where he can take over, where he can knock down like 5 3-pointers in the first quarter and get on a heater, something I'm not sure any Pacer can truly do. We've seen some signs of it in Pascal, but also small sample size here with the Pacers in just two games. I'm not sure if they looked as old or just gassed and needing some more offensive threats. I mean, it didn't feel like Middleton even had 15 points like he did. He tweaked his ankle early on in the game, got it retaped, came back in. I thought he was probably had 5 is what it felt like, but he ended up with 15. Brooke Lopez knocked down all those threes early on, ended up with 6 of them, and that's where he scored the majority of his points, 8 of his 22 points. Hayden says, what is your relationship with Rick Carlisle? He seems to be awkward at times. I think I think that's fair. We have a very professional relationship, better previously than probably it is right now. Very much in control, very much connected, very much knows what is being said out there, very much aware of who shows up at practice, who is present, what's the storylines, all those different things. And that's not surprising as well. Very organized, very disciplined. It's very much his show. And he's been running the Coaches Association for, as the president, like 16 years now. So he also advocates for his peers and wants to see them have success. But what you're referencing probably more than anything is what you see at the postgame podium. And I think he's been a little short right now during the postseason. He's been a little bit on edge the last week or so. And he's I don't know. That edge has really also been there that last week, I think, of the regular season and those questions. Yeah, someone at the bottom, R. Smith, adds, Carlisle is awkward everywhere. That's just him. Yeah, he's also thoughtful and great at reading the situation. That's the underrated thing that maybe fans don't see often as much. Very much understanding of people's family, players' family, who matters to them, who was present for them. Do you guys notice, for example, how the Halliburton family, his parents are right next to the Pacers bench? I know personally, me, I would not like that. I always wanted my parents, when I was playing younger, out of sight, out of mind. Otherwise, I would always look up. I don't know how Tyrese is in that element. Maybe he feels more comfortable, more secure with his kind of safety blanket, perhaps, of them right there, just like their courtside for Pacers games. I know I would not like that. Rick's a smart dude. He's just different. That's the best way to describe him. He just has his quirks, but also all of us kind of do in some respects. AJ says, love the adjustments from Rick. So do I. I want to see what can persist, what can continue on here. Still would like to see them trap Damian Lillard more often. I really would. I would like to see more on that front. I know he's an outstanding player, a Hall of Famer to be, but allowing 35 game one, 34 tonight in 39 minutes. He got hot early. That's probably the next step in this team's development in the postseason, is not allowing for the early start to slow them down. Instead, maybe they get off to the fast start. They lead after the first quarter. And that's one thing of note as well. The Pacers led at the end of every single quarter. They won every single quarter. Plus four after one, plus one after two. Talking the individual quarters, plus four in the third, plus eight in the fourth quarter. It wasn't quite a dominant win by no stretch, but by all the metrics and how things turned out, and just the eye test and those things, the Pacers had a firm grasp, I think, of this game too. They just really laid the hammer down in the fourth quarter and kind of suffocated, it felt like, the Bucks, and they were never able to respond once they got down by 23 points. Tell the truth, full court pressure wore down the Bucks. Yep, absolutely. That was part of it. That's something I think they'll continue to throw at them, just like the Bucks continue to throw full court pressure as well at Tyrese Halliburton. That's in large part why he only scored 12 points rather than, you know, having a 25-point night. I don't think he's a guy typically that's going to go off and have a 30-point night as much. I think Tyrese is more so the guy that can, well, I, in an ideal world, would get you 18 to 20 points and 12 assists, set everybody up, and help you to a victory. That's how I kind of view him. I don't see him as a guy that's going to blow up and go off for like 40 in a game here. What else do we got? A lot of comments. I love the interest after this post-game show. Keep it coming tonight. Keep it coming. Game three, game four, etc. I guess I did already, Robert, give a little bit of thoughts about Tyrese's lack of scoring driving. Him just being out there, him just being on the wing, helps open things up for everyone else as well. So he's still a threat, even if he's not scoring or launching it perhaps as many shots as the rest of us would like to see. Again, like I mentioned kind of early on in this postgame show, very similar to how Buddy Hield did it. Even if he wasn't knocking down shots or making shots, they still had to know where he was, face guard him, sometimes send double. And to go back to my previous thought a little bit, in terms of Damian Lillard, I'd like to see them throw some more traps, throw a little bit different defenses on him. But again, Pascal was the star, but I thought Andrew was spectacular tonight, finished with 20 points. Clearly a career high. It's only his second postseason game, right? which is funny, but here we go, right? And then also he had a huge defensive assignment. So for him to be pressuring full court, to be sent into so many screens, I venture to guess he was thrown in and went off about 40, 50 screens tonight in game two. He still had the energy, the poise to compete, to end up with 20 points, what, four rebounds, three assists in this one. And by the way, zero turnovers as well for Andrew Nimhard in 32 minutes of work. So that was impressive by him. A lot of comments and feedback from fans about Andrew, and rightfully so. He deserves a lot of the credit. What else do we got here? So many comments. It's hard for me to keep up here. Does a 5:30 tip-off Friday have much of an impact on fan attendance? Perhaps a little bit. It really, more than anything, affects what fans perhaps do before the game, in trying to go to the bars, in trying to grab dinner. I think they advertise like a Harry and Izzy's or St. Elmo's special before games. I'm not sure many will have the time to go do that for an hour and a half, then come to the game. That means you're taking a half day at work. I don't work a traditional job, right? So I don't know what that's like, if that's easy or whatever. I doubt it is. But dare you to take a half day and be able to experience downtown as the Pacers will be hosting their first playoff game since 2019, since right before the pandemic. And so that's what you're looking at. And I know this is much anticipated, and it's taken 5 years for them to get this. I've had buddies text me across the country that have been tuning in, eager for this game, and many of them, too, that were in state disappointed that they couldn't watch ultimately on NBA TV, thinking that they would be able to. Thomas Beam says, do you expect Game 3 to be sold out? Yes, absolutely. Pacers had 17 sellouts just during the regular season. Now it's the first postseason game in the history of Gainbridge, being the title sponsor of Gainbridge Fieldhouse, by the way. But more than that, again, first postseason game in 5 years. Yeah, it'll be a sellout. These two games, by the way, in Milwaukee were both sellouts. Just got to beat the Bucks with speed and energy. Bucks, one of the older starting fives. They are, absolutely. But you also need shooting. That's the one thing you got to mention there. 16 threes. It's not like they need 25 of them. 16 threes. You outscored them by 9 points beyond the arc. On top of that, I love the paint points. 52 to 36. Pacers are one of the worst teams at giving up paint points. And so I expected a higher number. But Brooke Lopez, for example, again, scoring 18 of his 22 points beyond the arc. I was surprised they were able to have that early three-point success. Let me look at that. First quarter, 6 of 13. The Bucks were in the first quarter from three-point range. After that, they were 7 for 19. Only 19 three-pointers the rest of the game after 13 in the first quarter. Pacers are... That has been one of their defensive emphasis, at least the first 3 months of the season, was to get teams off the line, force them to lower percentage shots. Now, they shifted away from that in mid to late December after a blowout loss to the Clippers. That's when their defense moved from 26th ranked in the league down to about average, about 18th. So that was one area they were willing to then sacrifice more of if it resulted in less points for the opposing team. Great podcast support for both the team and the fans. Appreciate it. Thanks for joining Accidental Migrant. Hope you're a subscriber as well of FieldhouseFiles.com as well as the podcast. I haven't done a ton on YouTube outside of posting video interviews and things I gather wherever I am. Summer League videos out in Las Vegas when they're there. Pre-draft videos. But I figured I should show more of me. Allow you to get to me more. And get to know me a little bit more. And on top of that, my favorite thing, quite frankly, is the interaction. When I'm recording my podcast, I don't have these interactions or these questions where I can reach you, the fans, directly and timely here. Right after the game, I'm sure your blood's pumping. You don't want to go to sleep right now. You're not thinking about work. You're thinking about this Pacers win. So I'm happy to talk shop with you and help keep that momentum going as we talk about this Pacers team. What else we got? Any chance Pascal is Batman and not Robin? Tyrese seems fine with it. Ultimately, they need to know who is who. I think that's what it is. I think Pascal is Batman. I've said all along, Tyrese, who will become a max player on July 1, I don't think you're winning a championship or getting to a NBA Finals with him as your number one, and that's completely fine. You got to know who you are. For instance, Paul George, I don't think you're winning a championship with him, and he's had an all-NBA career. He's going to be a Hall of Famer and tremendous draft pick of the Pacers going all the way back to 2010. He's not a number one. He needs Kawhi. The Clippers need Kawhi, I think, for them to make a run in the postseason. How much fun would that be, for example? But Tyrese can do so many things. Among them is push the pace, use that high IQ, highlight his vision, get others involved. And he's been great in the clutch, by the way, as well. We haven't needed to see it lately, but he's been a very good clutch player. I have no reason to believe he still would not possess that as well. I don't think you need clarity necessarily on that. As long as the players get it, recognize the moment and who should get the ball in the moment. It doesn't necessarily mean like you're down three, need a shot. You automatically go to number one guy. You read the matchups. You read the defense. If they double team Pascal, you go to Tyrese. Or if Tyrese is being hounded, TJ McConnell sets up Pascal. Whatever the case is, it's not so cut and dry, I think, perhaps like you maybe think it is. Luis says, you think with the Fever local TV deal, the Pacers can somehow be more accessible to fans to watch next season? Boy, I hope so. I know everybody hopes so. Absolutely. Would hopefully be the case. I need to get clarification on the Pacers deal because my understanding is that it might have one more year left. I'm not certain about that, not reporting. But one thing that was interesting about the TV deal in this Diamond Sports, where at least 15 teams have their deal up at the end of this season, is the fact of the Pacers could have had the opportunity, I believe, to do like several other teams. It felt like eight teams did, where they put up to 10 games on a trial basis on a different station. Perhaps it's WTHR, perhaps it's Wish TV, one of the local TV stations, rather than Bally, to see what that's like, to see how it works, to see what kind of TV rating you draw. Because I've said for years, this team, and it's not about the people, to be clear. It's about the network and the accessibility of the network. Nonetheless, the Pacers have a TV problem. For a while, and even still now, you can't watch all preseason games. And it was 2023. You should be able to watch any game, anywhere, in any market. As long as you obviously like have a league pass or something like that. I don't know if they could do this. I think they could because I've seen several other teams do this. But put a couple preseason games on Pacers.com or Pacers YouTube or something at the least. Why not? The more games, the better. Why not feed the appetite of fans out there? But this Bally Sports thing's tough, right? Because you got great broadcasters and a great production crew, but the accessibility is difficult. I have YouTube TV, for example. I can't get games on that service. Now, thankfully, the NBA and NBA PR took care of me and gave me a league pass that's not blacked out anywhere. Whereas if you, a subscriber in Central Indiana, subscribe to League Pass, the Pacers broadcast would be blacked out. And so that makes everything very difficult. I could so much do an entire podcast about media, about tech, about the TV rights, because that's a big issue. Obviously, I'm sure many of you saw how the TV window negotiating rights for the NBA as a whole, national window, is now open for the NBA to decide on. So that's a storyline for sure we are tracking. But we'd love to see this team more widely available. And the Fever deal you're referencing, if some of you aren't aware of, wrote about it on fieldhousefiles.com. But there will be at least 10 easily accessible Fever games on Channel 13. All you need is a streaming service, a cable service, or rabbit ears on your TV. Just old school, because you can get Channel 13 that way. I can get 13 through YouTube TV. You can get it through Hulu, for example. I do need to see their secondary station, their sister station. It's a lower-powered station. I believe it's 13.3. Certainly, I don't get it on streaming packages. I'm not sure about its distribution. 7 of those 17 Fever games will be on that network. There's obviously a lot of overlap here as well, by the way, because 36 of their 40 games are on other networks, Prime, CBS, ESPN. I have all of those. What I have is that WALV. I think more of you will want to talk about tonight's Pacer game in this series, so I'll get out of the TV rights conversation, but I plan to write more about that coming up, and also something I'm watching closely. No question about that. Back to the comments here on the Pacers postgame show. Ryan says, if the Pacers keep playing fast and score in transition, good things will happen. Absolutely. But that starts on the defensive end. It's not as simple as just running or saying, hey, guys, let's run a little bit more. It starts on getting stops. It starts on not always seeing the ball go through the hoop, taking it out of bounds, sending it in, having full court pressure. We saw the Bucks tonight, 44% from the field, barely 40% from three-point range. That's where it started. The Pacers won the rebounding battle. They held them to a much better number. I think they shot 47%, the Bucks did, in game one. But yes, if they can, play fast, score in transition, get it up the floor, catch them off guard. That's when the Pacers are generally at their best, Ryan, no doubt. MK sinks again. I'm counting on Giannis to be full go for game three. Would you agree? No, I do not agree with that. Full go, to me, suggests that he's playing his normal minutes. He's fully out there. I don't expect that. I tend to believe he won't be ready for game three. Doc Rivers said pregame, and as I mentioned in my At the Buzzer story on FieldhouseFiles.com, that he did a little bit more on the court today. He is progressing, but that's the extent of what he provided. He didn't say, hey, he played 3-on-3. What is his conditioning like, first of all? That goes even beyond the injury. But if it was normal or full go again, MK, I think that would suggest he'd play 40 minutes. And then it becomes a whole new game plan if you're the Pacers, because it would center around Giannis. Dame would obviously get heavily involved from there, and changes the entire dynamic. And Giannis, the Pacers have no answers for him as well. We all remember up in Milwaukee, Game Ball Gate, where he scored a franchise record 64 points. I wouldn't be shocked if he's out one more week through game four, then tries to give it a go at game five. But right now, it's all guesses. No one has a clear idea. I don't think he has a clear idea of what game he might return for, but I know he's chomping at the bit. Like, how could you not be? This is why he wants to be out there, and he wants to put his team in the best position to have success as well. Tell the truth. Thanks for the coverage. Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate the sentiment, and just as long as, make sure you subscribe to this channel. Make sure you're subscribed to FieldhouseFiles.com. That's all I'm asking from you. That would be a big help, and I want you to get all my work too. The more people, the better. Share it with a coworker. Share it on your email list. Share it with family and friends if it's something you like and enjoyed reading. I don't have a marketing budget. None of that. It's a one-man band here. So I'm producing this show. I'm recording the show. I'll post it on the podcast as well. Write more. Have another podcast set for tomorrow that I will be recording that I'll probably post late Wednesday, maybe Thursday. But thanks for tuning in. Luis, the new addition to the Pacers YouTube channel showing post-game interviews has been amazing for diehard fans. You like that. Gotcha. Good to know. I think we've seen the Pacers digital department start doing that the last two seasons. It's something they really hadn't done too much of, but it's something they've done because they've invested in digital. I'm highly disappointed that they don't have a writer. I think everything starts at having a writer, having a beat writer. Many of you may not know that I got my first start out of college after being a ball boy for the team for 10 years with Pacers.com. I was the beat writer. My friend Mark Monteith was the columnist. So I love everything they're doing digitally from a video standpoint. I think this is unsolicited advice. I'd love to see them hire at least one writer, and then they also need a reporter to front everything and be their digital reporter as well. That's a different conversation. Tell the truth? Yeah, absolutely. Just go to FieldhouseFiles.com. You and everybody, and you'll be set. Here, I'll post it in the chat as well, in case you didn't know that. But that's all you need to know. All right, so yeah, I'm glad you like that, Luis, in terms of seeing those videos. Check my channel as well. I'm posting many different interviews for you to see after game one. I tightened it a little bit. You probably don't have 30 minutes to watch interviews, so I cut it down, I want to say, to like 6 minutes. The key 6 minutes of what was said post-game, plus this live podcast and a lot more. Another question here, how long do you think the series lasts? That'd just be a pure guess at this point because of the continuing to change and evolve dynamics, right? When does Giannis come back? Does anyone else get hurt? Is Chris Middleton good with his ankle? Does Dame Lillard slow down, or does he keep it going? Originally, it kind of felt like a six-game series, but I think because of the Giannis question mark, it'd be foolish to take a guess right now. I do. Luis again says, tonight was the first night I've seen the whole team play defense like dogs. They ran and pressed and played intensely. Love the insights, or love tonight's showing, I should say. Yeah, I want to review the tape for sure and watch it back to really hone in and zero in on what they did defensively, what maybe was different. Very hard to do that as I'm taking notes, I'm tweeting, I'm writing my post-game story, getting ready for this post-game show, tweeting, all those different things. But it did feel like the defense had a different level of intensity and focus tonight, which in my primer column for tonight's game is exactly what I was stressing, the details, the intensity, the focus – It sounds simple, but where was it in game one, right? That just doesn't make sense. So we saw more of that, and in doing so, we saw a Pacers victory in doing so. Appreciate you subscribing, Tell the Truth. Yeah, Luis, happy to contribute. Been covering this team longer than anyone. This is year 12 on the Pacers beat, which is remarkable. I mean, I remember being the only beat reporter to cover every single game during the pandemic year. They had us way up in the corner. I needed my binoculars. That was when I started bringing binoculars to home games when I covered them, and I'm glad I did. But you see so many little details doing different things like that. And so I take great pride in. I talked about details with the team. That's one of the things I think I'm great at, are the details, finding little nuggets, finding little tweaks, changes, whether it be what they did on the court or a player changing shoes at halftime or their parents sitting courtside or what have you. Those are the things I love. The other thing, more than anything, is humanizing the players. Because why are we fans of whatever we're fans of in general? It's the people involved. It's their story. It's them overcoming adversity. It's in this game, for example, it's Rick Carlisle's adjustments with his coaching staff. And what does that look like in a room? I would love to have some kind of like all access off the record up until, after the series and be able to write about, you know, what is it like being a coach in the playoff? I have so many different story ideas that race through my head. Teams aren't going to do that. They're highly restrictive. But those are the type of things that race through my mind when we're going through a series. Dave, good breakdown. Thanks for the coverage. You're welcome. Appreciate you tuning into the postgame show. And you too, Dave, if you haven't subscribed to Fieldhouse Files, go ahead and do that. Free and paid subscribers, so you don't have to commit your wallet, but that's where you're going to get all the good stuff. Brian, Pacers are finally in playoff mode. His Carlisle's tighter rotations and adjustments are spot on. Absolutely. I thought we saw some early adjustments from this Pacers team after the first half last game and how they defended Dame, and I was surprised we didn't see more of that. I was surprised tonight there weren't more traps and doubles of Dame and forcing it out of his hand. And again, that's something else I want to go back and watch more of the tape, especially in that third quarter where it was going back and forth. We saw the Bucks cut it to within four until the Pacers made their giant run. But we talk about playoffs in terms of always being game a series and in terms of game. I can't even talk. The games being just a series of constant adjustments. I think you'll generally see the most adjustments going into this next game. They got 2 days between games, Wednesday and Thursday. Probably one day of practice, maybe a second day of light practice, but that's when you really have an understanding of what the opposing team's trying to do. For example, if you're the Bucks, here's what you're doing, right? You're sitting back saying, all right, we got Tyrese minimized. We are great with Tyrese having 8 points or 12 points. 12 assists, we can live with that. We don't want him to have 18 assists and have that much impact on the game. If I'm Doc Rivers or on his staff, I'm sitting there going, much like the Pacers need to with Dame, they need to sit there and go, what about Pascal, guys? What are we doing about Pascal? Do we need to send two on him? They showed some zone in game two. What was the effectiveness of that? I need to look that up on Spectrum Sports and see what that looked like and was that efficient. Generally, zones are effective against the Pacers, I will say. That's what you're considering. You're seeing how the Bucks didn't turn the Pacers over nearly enough. Four turnovers, that's rarely going to get you some wins. You got to make them uncomfortable. And then shooting 45% from three-point land, Pacers are going to win more games than not when they're having that success and when they outshoot you from three-point land. That's another thing you're absolutely considering. But really, it starts with Tyrese and Pascal. And if you're the Bucks, you really want to minimize. How can we keep Pascal from 37 points to 21 points to 25 points? If he just has that difference, that's a 15-point difference, and that's a whole different ballgame. Brian said Bucks seemed gassed in the second half, especially Lillard. Absolutely. This is a lot being asked of them, and Lillard played 39 minutes tonight. Lillard played 38 minutes in game one, would have played more if both games weren't blowouts as well. Those are challenges that any team faces against the Pacers. So going back to the Bucks, you're trying to slow the Pacers down. You're trying to get it playing more into the half court. That is absolutely advantageous for the Milwaukee Bucks here. And so those are the considerations that you are having. Any other questions for me tonight here on this live stream? I'm probably going to wrap this up shortly. I wouldn't mind, though. Happy to take just a couple more questions here on the live stream on YouTube. I'm also going to post it later on my Fieldhouse Files podcast. Appreciate any of you listening as well. Hope you're doing so at 2x speed if you're on the podcast. That's the best way to do it. But overall, an impressive win by this Pacers team. Miles subtly contributing 22 points, really solid. And if you consider that, Brook Lopez, 22 points, so it's a wash. So the second best scorer, top scorer on the Bucks, wipe his stat line away because Miles Turner matched it. So then you got to go to the next line, Chris Middleton, 15. Well, guess what? For the Pacers, Nimhardt had 20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's so many different ways in which the Pacers won this one, that being another one. Lack of turnovers, fantastic, points in the paint. But more than anything, I go back to the intangibles, quite frankly. It felt like they were in control early on, that they had the discipline, that they weren't panicking, that the lights were not too big for them early on. And I'm not surprised with that happening in game one, right? This was a whole new experience for so many of them. Outside of Pascal Siakam, really. Even Miles Turner hadn't been in the playoffs since 2020. That was down in the bubble. It's been a while, and you heard him probably on the post game saying, man, I can't wait to get back to Gainbridge, play in front of the fans, and feel our home crowd. So that will absolutely be fun. Friday night, or I guess afternoon, 5:30 Eastern time will be that one. Brian says Nimhard's 90-foot defense on Lillard wore him down. It sure did. And then I also think a couple guys I want to talk more about, Aaron Nesmith, just so solid, so reliable, did a little bit at both ends. Look, knocked down 3 3-pointers. I think I said in my series primer that if he could play defense, slow down Middleton, kept him to 15 points, great, and knocked down about 3 threes per game, bingo. Love everything about that. He had a block shot, 7 assists. I didn't even realize that in live terms. And then on top of that, he restrained a couple of his teammates who were kind of on edge, playing competitively. He reeled them in, and that's, you definitely need that from a teammate. That's even more difficult if you're Nesmith and on the court. Usually that might be a bench guy who doesn't have the adrenaline of playing. But well done by Aaron Nesmith. And then I thought Obi Toppin, especially early on, he had 6 points, I think, in that first quarter, at least first half. Altered several shots, got up and down and running so well. The Pacers did not go to that bench very often. 21 minutes for him, 24 minutes for Ben Shepherd, just 17 for TJ McConnell, and that was your bench unit. It was the top scoring bench in the regular season, but excuse me. As I emphasized after last game, a bench will only take you so far in the playoffs. That's something that's better suited for the regular season during the 82-game season. When you're playing back-to-backs, when you have a disadvantaged schedule, when you're flying from D.C. to San Antonio in the middle of the night, you get in at 3 a.m., that's when you need depth. In the postseason, you need stars. In the postseason, you need experience, and you need guys that can get their own bucket. And Pascal being a wing, wings are so valuable. Wings are the most valuable position, I think, in the postseason. And you could see why, again, tonight, with what Siakam was able to get accomplished. And Pacers are optimistic about re-signing him, and this just furthers the reason why Chad Buchanan and company went out and were able to secure a deal to get Pascal at the trade deadline. And this is when it matters. you know, who cares if he has a 17-point game a couple months ago? These are the moments when you rely on a guy like Pascal, and he played tremendous in this Pacers 125-108 win in game two over the Milwaukee Bucks. So it's 1-1, best of seven series. I would be advocating for the NBA to go back to best of five in the first round. I don't think we need seven games to settle these. You maybe could argue differently in this series considering Giannis's status, right? Like, what if he's back for game six or game seven? That could be truly helpful for a team like the Bucks. But normally first round, I mean, leading up to this game, I haven't been able to follow the ones after one, but the home team had won 12 games, and 12 games had only been played. So Pacers now will head home. It is a gold out. I have all that on my in a story on fieldhousefiles.com. The Pacers will again be in their gold statement edition uniforms by Nike, and all fans in attendance will receive a gold T-shirt. I don't know why a 5:30 game time, Brian, other than I'm sure TV wants it. I haven't seen the full TV schedule, but I'm sure there's a 5:30, a 7:30, and a 9:30 type tip. It's a weekend, but TV almost exclusively dictates tip-off time. So Friday at 5:30 won't be easy for everyone. It will mean earlier night. Means you're not watching a game at 11 p.m. You're not on after midnight right now with me here on YouTube talking about the game. So just plan ahead and be aware. But that'll wrap up tonight's post-game show after the Pacers' Game 2 win. Pascal Siakam, clearly the player of the game. Full Pacers coverage, as always, from me at fieldhousefiles.com and the Fieldhouse Files podcast. Thanks to everyone who was able to join tonight and everyone else who may be watching this on replay or listening on the podcast. Series is even at one apiece, and I'll talk to you again soon.